Hi, everybody, and thank you for joining us for the Preceptor Podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Ryan. And today we have with us one of our colleagues and a returning guest, Dr. Thomas Smith. Tom, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks for having me again, guys. I'm Tom Smith. I'm an associate professor of pharmacy practice and pharmacogenomics, board certified psychiatric pharmacist. So I have a practice site in acute care in psychiatry. I've been practicing for about 10 years now.
And we wanted to have Tom here to talk a little bit. I know that it's hard to think about in the days of COVID that other things do happen in the world of medicine, but they do.
Yeah, life doesn't just stop, unfortunately.
Yeah. There are other disease states out there, right?
Yeah.
So we asked Tom here just to talk a little bit about using antidepressants in people with pregnancy. So there's been some new things that came out. I know that there's some studies currently being done, and just to kind of give us a state of where we are right now, what's safe for women to use in pregnancy? Should we be using antidepressants in pregnancy? I know there's some guidelines, but they haven't been changed in several years. So could you just give us an update of where we currently are with this?
Sure. I think overall, not a lot of groundbreaking news, which is both positive and unfortunate. So the positive aspects of it is it likely means what we have been doing and what we think is effective and safe likely is. So we typically will use our normal first line medications for depression that we use in other populations. So SSRIs, SNRIs. SSRIs probably have the most data and are seen as the safest for individuals who are pregnant. But SNRIs, venlafaxine, duloxetine, they're both likely safe as well. And then also bupropion and mirtazapine. Everyone always kind of forgets about mirtazapine, but it is usually a first-line medication for most populations and could be considered as well. So we typically do like to use SSRIs if we can. And again, since there hasn't been a lot of movement on this front, and like you said, Sarah, guidelines haven't really been updated in a few years for multiple organizations, likely that's because data that has come out since then really just supports the use of those medications. And so most of our SSRIs we do feel are safe in pregnancy. There is a concern with Paxil. So Paxil is always kind of the one that stands out for a lot of negative reasons among the SSRI class. That is a pregnancy category D medication. However, with that being said, where it got that rating was from some early data that said there may be some risk of cardiac malformations with that medication. Data that has come out since then hasn't necessarily supported that. So even Paxil, even though it gets this bad name, it does have a category D rating, it's probably not as risky as we thought at one point. So generally, we still would look at that medication as one that we wouldn't want to start if we don't have to. If we have all of our options at play, we likely would want to use a different SSRI. Sertraline is often seen as the safest among the SSRIs. But again, even there, that's not necessarily supported by a lot of data. So it's not like the other medications in the class are known to be much more risky. But sertraline, citalopram, escitalopram generally are the three that we'll target if we can. But what that means is if someone is doing well on a different medication, including Paxil, this is a medication we've known that it is effective for an individual. Without using this medication, they have poor outcomes. It doesn't mean that we can't continue to use it in pregnancy. Again, it wouldn't be ideal. It wouldn't be a medication that we would like to choose if all the options are on the table. But we shouldn't look at paroxetine as a absolute, you know, contraindication in pregnancy and that we can never use it. For some individuals, if it is the option that we do feel will be best for that person, then we still could consider it. So again, I think not, you know, having no news is sometimes good news. It means that we probably are doing the right thing. We're on the right track. What's unfortunate is, again, we don't have kind of unique options for patients who are depressed while pregnant. And I think this is really important because we often look at depression as the same for everyone because it looks similar. So across disease states, it may look very similar. So patients who have bipolar depression, for example, look very similar to someone who has major depressive disorder, but we know that treatments are very different. So if you give someone who has bipolar disorder SSRIs, they tend to not do well. So what that likely means is while the phenotype may look the same, what actually is happening in terms of the pathophysiology is likely different. So I think we need to get to a point in psychiatry and treating depression with understanding the mechanisms that's causing the illness and then having drug targets that can target that specific mechanism. So there is maybe some hope. It's not a drug a couple years ago was approved, Zelresso. It's approved for postpartum depression, so it's not approved for depression while a patient's pregnant. But this drug is interesting because it does not work. Its mechanism is very different than any other antidepressant that we have. It targets really more of what we think is happening in the pathophysiology and the mechanism behind postpartum depression. So it's interesting that we finally have an option that deviates from serotonin and our typical mechanisms with SSRIs and SNRIs that are very similar. So that is interesting. And it's, again, I think of the direction that we need to be taking where we're finding treatments that match up better with the pathophysiology of the illness and not just treatments that we think help with the symptoms that may look similar. So that's an example of a drug. Again, it wouldn't be used for patients who are currently pregnant. It does have a lot of potential problems itself. It's only an injectable drug. It has to be given through a very long infusion. So it's not an easy drug to use. But that is a positive development, I would say, within the realm of depression. And when we think about special populations and really targeting individuals, again, with their underlying mechanism of the disease state.
Tom, I have a question. Are we seeing a lot of uptake of that more specialized drug? Do you see that when you were in practice, or does it seem to be kind of slow going? And
I haven't seen it personally. And one of the reasons why I think is it is a little bit, it kind of falls in a world between two worlds. Is it psychiatry that has this drug, or is it, OB that kind of has this drug? Because it really is targeted mostly for the best case to use it would be right after delivery, since patients still have to be back in the hospital. They have to get this infusion. They have to be constantly monitored. So it kind of is a medication that I don't think anyone knows exactly who is best to kind of lead it. It also is extremely expensive. I think it's like $40,000 for the treatment. And that doesn't include the hospital stay, obviously, and all the costs that come with being in the hospital. So it also is an interesting drug because it is a one-time infusion that we do think the effects, one, work relatively quickly compared to most of our traditional antidepressants. And then two, the effects last after. You don't have to continue to take this medication. So they'll last for at least a few months. So another kind of interesting front where we're also seeing hopefully medications that, again, tackle the problem of most of our antidepressants taking a long time to work. And then, how often do we have to give the medication? So I would say generally it's not used very often yet. That may change in the future as we get more comfortable with it. But so far, I haven't seen a huge uptake.
Tom, when I was in practice, and I had this question a couple of times, and I'm not looking to pin you down, but I want to hear your thought process. So let's say you have a patient who's controlled on Paxil or Paroxetine, mm-hmm. and they are pregnant. Mm-hmm. What is your thought process there? What kind of conversations are you having, and how do you really treat that patient?
Yeah, I think it's important to go back in time a little bit and look at that individual's history and try to figure out, well, what exactly are we treating here? So first, keep in mind that a lot of individuals are on SSRIs, including Paxil, for a lot of different things. So we don't want to assume that it's for major depressive disorder. And if it's for something else that we think we possibly could control without the medication, then we can have that as a consideration. But if it is an individual who is using it for depression, I think we want to take a look at what that means for that person. So how serious were your episodes? How long have you been taking this medication? Have we ever had a period in the past where we have tried to discontinue that drug? And what did that look like for you? Did the patient relapse? And then how severe was that relapse? And I think we also have to remember, it's very easy to always go to the risks of the drug, but there's the inherent risks of the disease state. So we know that individuals, and it's not even just in the short term, obviously someone who's pregnant and depressed, we're concerned about self-care, we're concerned about proper weight gain. We're always concerned, obviously, about suicide and self-harm. But there is data on longer-term outcomes in women who are depressed while pregnant. And outcomes with the fetus around the time of birth, but then also in the child as the child develops. What does that mean from a neurodevelopmental standpoint? So depression is, we often think of it strictly as a problem with the individual who's pregnant, but there could be risks to the baby as well. So we want to understand the risks of the illness and then obviously weigh that with the risks of the of medication. And if I think if we have a individual who has had some serious depression in the past and has responded well, it's in any scenario, it's very difficult to say, let's change that plan. If we have had a plan that has worked and is currently working, that usually means in most cases that we want to continue that and that the benefits of that plan are going to outweigh any of the small risks that may come with the use of the antidepressant. So again, it's every situation is different and you possibly could consider switching to a different SSRI. It's usually pretty easy to make that switch if you felt comfortable and that we could try something else. And if you wanted to use something like sertraline, I think that in some cases you could do that. But again, I think that there definitely are some scenarios where we would say we have a plan that's working, you're on this medication. It's just a little bit too risky right now to try to change anything. Especially if we haven't really had this planned out, right? The best situation might be, hey, let's really have a planned pregnancy and we can make a bunch of changes way before and we can experiment with some things and that gives us plenty of time. And once we feel like everything has changed over and we're in a good stable state, then we'll think about pregnancy. But obviously that doesn't happen all the time in real life either. So you want to be, I know it's always tough to continue to recommend drugs that we do have some risks with. But considering the illness, we often want to continue on a plan if we know that the plan has been successful and we have evidence of that.
Appreciate that. And that's something I always consider is, you know, the risk of treatment, but the risk of no treatment as well. Right. So thank you for bringing that up. Mm-hmm.
Tom, anything on the horizon? Anything we should be watching for? Anything that, you know, might change this?
Yeah, I think it goes back to that hope that we're going to have some more novel mechanisms when it comes to drug therapy. So an example would be esketamine. Esketamine was approved, a couple of years ago now. It's not approved for use in pregnant individuals. It probably wouldn't be used at this point in patients who are pregnant. Again, just being how new the medication is. But it works differently and it works more rapidly. And so that is something that we're very hopeful for, that we'll continue to have similar drugs that can improve on these unfortunate aspects of most of our traditional antidepressants. And there was a point, I don't know where it is now, but there were at least a couple different compounds that were similar to that Zulresso drug, that one were PO. And so we were hopeful that we'd be able to take that drug and get it to an oral formulation that would make it much more widely accessible. And then two would eventually be developed not just for postpartum depression, but also for depression for anyone. And then also maybe finding that it could be an option potentially for patients who are pregnant too. I don't know if that was ever actually explored yet in clinical development. However, I haven't seen where those have made it yet. So I think we're hopeful with you know some of these new medications that we would get some developments, but nothing has been approved yet. So we're still kind of wait and see what comes out of that there. And I guess in depression in general, there is a lot of interest in other types of compounds as well. Again, I think we're understanding that we have a good arsenal of serotonergic drugs, but we probably need to think of this in a little bit of a different way as well. And so can we think of medications and compounds that work a little bit differently, and will those start to be developed that help individuals who are resistant to these other medications that we have available, and again start to be more targeted for different special populations that have these illness.
This is all really good information, Tom. If our listeners are interested in depression and pregnancy, where can they go to learn more?
Yeah, so typically, you know, you have your guidelines, so like American Psychiatric Association, NICE guidelines from the UK are very good. As we mentioned, they're not recently updated. And I think part of that is, again, as I said, there's just not a huge movement at this point. A website that I like that most may not be aware of, but I think does a really good job, is called the Florida Medicaid Drug Therapy Management Program for Behavioral Health. It's MedicaidMentalHealth.org. And this is put together by the University of South Florida and other individuals that they work with and other teams that they work with. And they do a really good job of developing guidelines on their own. They do a good job of looking at special populations. And so they'll have information on treating mental illness in adolescents. They do have information about treating mental illness in pregnancy. So that is, I think, a nice website that most probably won't be aware of that really has some good tools that I think just complement your arsenal of your other tools that you typically look for.
I think we could put a link to that in the show notes. So if you want to go find that, you can go to the link in the show notes for this show.
Tom, thanks so much for taking the time today to talk to us about this. Really appreciate your expertise and insight.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. Thanks, Sarah.
And thank you all for joining us for this episode of the Pharmacy Preceptor Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please like or subscribe. We would love your feedback on topics that interest you and how we can make this podcast better. Please submit your comments to help us develop content that best serves you. Thanks, everyone.